First, I want to thank you, the class, for asking me to speak to you. I have the privilege of working at this institution, and I see opportunities like this as very special. And so I thank you. I don't know who put my name in the hat, but I'm glad I was picked. My work here at Andrews University is not in the classroom, and it's not in the resident halls, but I talk about students all the time. I travel a lot with Dr. Andreessen, our president, and we meet with people, and we landed up talking about you. You're a great product to talk about, great bragging opportunities. And you need to know that the only reason I work here at Andrews University is because of the students. There's no other purpose, because you are the future and the energy for us. Because of my work, I don't get to meet many of the students, and that's a disappointment because of my responsibilities away. But my wife is Dean Fainer, with the Vice President for Student Services, and she started a tradition, and that is inviting the freshman class to our house every year. I realize that many of you are graduate students, but those who are not, you may remember coming. We didn't know how many of you would show up, but that specific Saturday night, 140 of you showed up. It was a good showing. I'm not quite sure why, but maybe the word was out that Dr. Chobotar's pizza, he's great at making those, he brought 34 homemade pizzas to the house with these amazing ingredients, and you ate them all. So you're an interesting bunch. I do know that much about you. Many good things have happened over the last 4 years that you have been students here at this institution. I'd like to share three of them with you. First, it was about a year ago, there was a Hurricane Katrina hit the United States. That was not a good thing. But the students of this institution responded in an amazing way. Right here in chapel, the day after the hurricane, they asked for volunteers. We had one bus, and you filled it. And we needed a second bus. We sent the second 50 people on a yellow school bus, 20 hours, and it cost you $250 to have the privilege to ride in the yellow school bus. And you went, you did a great job, and Bass Memorial Academy is better because of your involvement. The second story is about the passion play. And I know that many of you have volunteered to make that a success. The passion play under leadership of Ron Whitehead has been an amazing success. And you should know that we have between 8,000 and 9,000 students that come every year to that program. And you should see the effect that it has on the individuals who come. It's tremendous. You ought to be commended. And third, for the students who have come from the undergrad experience, there's a program called the Andrews Partnership Scholarship. It's a program that Dr. Andreessen suggested that we have, providing additional scholarships beyond the normal scholarships so we can get the best and the brightest students from anywhere in the world. And many of you came, and we've had one of the finest classes that ever have gone through this institution. So parents that are here tonight, and family, you should be proud of the individuals who are about to graduate. We at the institution are proud of these students. And you know, if you would allow me just a moment, I'd like to share a story. Because I'm a proud parent too, I want to tell you about something that happened to my sons and I. As you know, we have the privilege to live in a thriving metropolis called Berrien Springs, Michigan. And you remember, we have two lights. There's a police officer here in the group, and he knows that when you go past the speeding light. But let me tell you, that one Friday afternoon, it was my privilege to drive home with my sons, and we were talking, and we got to the middle of the town. It doesn't take too long to get there, but we were in the middle of the town, and there was a light, and I was ready to keep going. I realized I needed gasoline for my car. And so I stopped and got some gasoline. And of course, to my sons, they're not thinking about my car. They're thinking about Slurpees. I don't know if you like Slurpees or not, but they're a very nice drink in the summer. And so my son said to me, "Dad, can we get a Slurpee?" And I said, "Fine." By the way, if you buy a Slurpee this week in some time, they're 79 cents now for any size. Any size. But 2 years ago, when this happened to us, it was 79 cents for 16 ounces, 89 cents for 24 ounces, 99 cents for 32 ounces. So I gave my boys a dollar each, and I said, "Bring me the change, only get the 89 cents, medium size." They went in, they came back, about the time that I was done getting the gasoline. As they got in the car, we were ready to drive out, something happened to me. It's a New York habit. Anybody here from New York? Yeah, a couple. Okay. If you've been from New York, I mean in New York City, not upstate New York, real New Yorkers, you know there's a habit that you have, and that is called beating the light. And so I saw that light ready to turn red, and I was trying to hurry home and do some chores, and I hurriedly almost made it through the light. But it was what had happened during the next 30 seconds to a minute that was amazing. My son in the back said, "Dad, we have a problem." I said, "What is the problem?" He said, "They only charged me 79 cents for an 89 cent Slurpee." And he said, "With tax, that's a problem. I owe them 11 cents. And his two boys, we have 22 cent problem." Mom, okay. I got 10 things on my mind. I'm trying to pull a New York maneuver through the traffic, and my boys are talking about 22 cents. As we sat at the light, I remember what I had taught them, and that was a rule that says, if they overcharge you, speak up. If they undercharge you, pay up. Okay. The boys were right. As the light changed in the middle of Berrien Springs, I realized I had to make a quick decision. I started down the road towards the bridge, and the light, and as I realized that as we came to Main Street, which is the road towards the post office, I decided I should go around the curb, around the block, and take the boys back. And that's exactly what I decided to do. But I did it very quickly. I quickly got in the left lane. I quickly forgot to put on my turn signal. I quickly cut in front of another traffic that was coming. About now, the president of Angie's is saying, "What's so unusual about that?" As he drives with me, and he says I drive like that regularly. But I then headed towards the post office. I was picking up speed. I was in a hurry. I had 10 things to do, and now I had 11. As I got to the post office, I made a quick left turn. Happened to be another car coming, but I got inside him. I went another half a block, and my oldest son said, "Dad, there's a man with his lights on behind you." I said, "Why would he be pulling me over? Did you boys don't have your seatbelts on?" I pulled on over. The officer came to the car. I always do this if I ever get stopped. I say, "Officer, how can I help you?" And he said, "What in the world are you doing? You are driving like a maniac through town. You're speeding. You're cutting off people. You're not using your turn signal. What is going on?" I said, "Officer, it's a very long story, but let me give you the short version. My son got a Slurpee. It was 89 cents. He paid 79 cents. And I said, this tax and his two boys is a 22 cent problem. And my boys want to go back and pay the man." The officer looked at me, and I don't think that helped anybody looking at me. He didn't trust me. But he looked at those boys, and he said, "Okay." As he got back in his car, I was watching him in the mirror. For some reason or another, my left hand started working better, and I found the turn signal. The left hand went down, and I drove out very slowly, very slowly. As I got to the next corner of 31, I waited because he was right behind me. There was no traffic coming from probably a half a mile each way. As we got back to the gas station, I said, "Boys, take care of this." And they did. They went inside. They gave the man the money. They came back out. The man said, "I will not take your money." He said, "It's no big deal. No big deal." to pay money that you owe. Let me tell you something tonight. I think honesty is a big deal. If you graduated with a 4.0, if you led the Katrina mission trip, if you are the star on the basketball team, but if you have not learned the importance of honesty, then we have failed. Let me share you what I think about some thoughts on honesty. Honesty is the glue that holds the society together. The relationship between the merchant and the customer. Doesn't it make you feel good when you talk with an honest person? Doesn't it give you a peace of mind to make a transaction with an honest person? Allow me now, you very sophisticated students at various ages, but let me take you back, and maybe the audience also, to the time when you were younger. And you used to like, maybe you were 10 years old, and you liked your parents to read you from a series of books that we think were quite good. You remember Uncle Arthur's bedtime stories? Don't raise your hands, because it's probably at least half the people. In that book, there is a story about a young boy named Scott, and I wanted to tell you about it. Scott grew up in the western part of the United States. He was a boy that was poor. He was a boy that wanted, that needed some money. And so his parents said to him, "We need you to go and get a job." So he went to town. And there he saw farmers who were talking to each other, buying and selling animals, but also hiring people to work. Scott was rugged looking, and he was honest looking, and he was about 13 or 14 years old. When the man approached Scott, he said, "Can you work, boy?" And Scott said, "I can sleep on windy nights." The man was puzzled. He walked away. A little bit later, he came back, and he asked the same boy again, Can you work, boy? And Scott said, "I can sleep on windy nights." It puzzled the owner, the farmer, but nevertheless, he hired him. He took him home, and he worked very well. Sure enough, on one night, there was a serious storm. And the farmer came running up to Scott's room, and he said, "Scott, get up. I need your help." And Scott did not respond. He grabbed him by his foot and shook it and said, "Scott, I need your help." And Scott did not respond. The farmer was angry, and he decided at that point that he would fire Scott in the morning. He went outside, and when he got there and walked to the barn, you know what he found? He found a barn that was secure. All the animals were inside the barn. The haystack was neatly put together and secure. The farmer walked away, and as he walked down outside, he said to himself, "Now I know why Scott would say that I could sleep on windy nights." Scott believed that if you did an honest day's work for an honest day's pay, that was a good thing. Excuse me. There's another part of honesty that I want to share with you, and that deals with it's a good witness to other people. There was a famous American. His name was Abraham Lincoln. He was famous because he saved the Union during the Civil War. He also freed the slaves. He was also known as what? Honest Abe. You remember the story? It's a very simple story. Honest Abe walked 3 miles of town to buy his provisions, and he found out that when he got home, he had one penny too many. He turned around, went back and paid the man, and then went back home. Tonight, I would like to tell you the story of another honest man. His name was Donald Gibbs. He also attended this school. He was here in the 30s. He met a gal named Sally, who later became his wife. He went on to go to a place called Loma Linda University and finished medical school number one in his class. He decided to go back to a little town called Cortland, New York. He had lots of energy, lots of intelligence, and a commitment to the Lord. He was a doctor that you would call 24/7, 365. He was a person that made home visits. He's a person that didn't charge the poor. He was a person that was involved in his community. In 1942, after 6 years as a practice successfully, the American government called him to serve as a doctor in the Second World War. He was stationed in the Pacific. And those of you know the history of World War II, the soldiers went from island to island between 1942 until eventually they landed up in the Philippines and then Japan. Dr. Gibbs faithfully and carefully took care of his soldiers. But many a soldier died on his operating table. Many a soldier lost an arm or leg. And he himself injured, his back was injured, requiring him to wear a brace. In 1946, after the war, he returned back to his practice. Shortly after returning, he received a letter in the mail from the government. It said, because you were injured during the war, you were receiving a 40% disability for the rest of your life. In other words, they take the salary that you were making, they give you 40% of that, and you get it forever. And he wrote back to them. He says, it is true, I was injured, but my country has been good to me, and I never missed a day of work. See, he lived his life by a different standard. He continued to work until the age of 83, almost 50 more years. During that time, he raised 12 children. Six of them came to Andrews University. He converted 75 people to the Adventist Church and was involved in many philanthropic efforts. He was a successful doctor, but not a rich doctor. At the age of 70, he received a letter from the government, and it was by an accountant who realized that he had never been received his money from the past. He received a check for $318,000 as back pay. And today, that money would be the same as $968,000. I don't know how many checks you've been getting at that level. I have not been receiving any for $968,000, or just, let's call it $1 million. But he did. Some of his family members knew how much he loved the church and said, Dad, take the money and give it to the Adventist Church. But he said, it is true, I was injured. My country owes me nothing. I have never missed a day of work. And he sent back a check for $968,000 to the government. You see, he lived by a different standard. It was Shakespeare who said, no legacy is so rich as honesty. There are times in your life that you may wonder if you're doing the right thing by being honest. And people around you may question it and say, don't worry about being honest, it's no big deal. Let me tell you, I think honesty is a very, very big deal. It will help determine on how you will live your life and who you will be. You see, Dr. Gibbs, in his life, he was a witness to others, but he also taught his children and his grandchildren to live to this highest standard. And tonight, one of his granddaughters is actually graduating from this graduating class. let me conclude by saying, this weekend, you will be getting a degree. It's just not any degree. It's an Andrews University degree. Degree determined and based on academic excellence. A degree based on spiritual excellence. A degree based on moral excellence. Soon, you will be joining a team of 30,000 alumni, 30,000 alumni who have gone before you, who are serving in leadership positions throughout this world. And like them, you are men and women also of integrity. Like them, you are men and women who will earn the trust of your peers. And with the comfort and knowledge, like them, you will sleep on windy nights. And you can trust me when I tell you, you all have windy nights. Remember, honesty and personal courage are the hallmarks of great character. And great character are the hallmark of Andrews University graduates. Congratulations, and God bless you.